We begin the program today with a focus on the National Archives. Last week on this program, we ran some highlights of a hearing of a House Oversight Subcommittee talking about issues with the chain of custody of hard drives at the National Archives. You can go to federalnewsradio.com/in-depth and look for the story National Archives Under the Gun on Keeping Information Under Control. And this hearing taking place last week, as we said, one of the witnesses at the hearing is was the Inspector General of the National Archives and Records Administration, Paul Brackfeld. And Mr. Brackfeld is my guest to talk about this issue and what your agency can do about it. Mr. Brackfeld, thank you very much for being with me today. I appreciate your time.
It's my pleasure.
For folks who weren't able to hear the hearing and haven't had a chance to review it on the website yet, talk about the situation that the archives found itself in the instance that you were particularly testifying about to the committee last week.
Last week, on November 5th, I actually testified about three distinct losses of records. The first case was the Clinton 2-terabyte hard drive, which had records from the Clinton administration. We believe the 2-terabyte hard drive was basically consumed with records. That was removed or lost from our facility here in College Park, Maryland. We've also had another investigation, which I testified about, where data on a, what's called the Case Management and Reporting System, or CMRS, which holds millions of military personnel records center information. That drive was returned to a vendor for it was supposedly damaged and had defects, so it was returned to a vendor for maintenance under a contract. And then we had a third case that kind of mirrors the second case, where another hard drive was returned also or remitted to a vendor again because it was supposedly damaged, and that had records of personnel records related to federal employees from at least three different federal agencies. So I talked about three different cases we're dealing with right now.
Okay, let's for a moment, the main thing I want to talk to you about today is the chain of custody issues and the recommendations that you've made to the agency. Acting archivist, Ms. Thomas, talked about a report that had been prepared by the company SAIC that contained 29 recommendations. You've made recommendations. The Government Accountability Office has made recommendations to NARA. So I do want to talk about those and what someone at another agency can take away from those recommendations, in particular yours, since they're the ones that you're the most familiar with, obviously. But I want to talk about these records themselves for a moment, if we can, because
sure.
Before this hearing and a hearing that you testified at in July, which we also ran highlights of, there has not been, to my knowledge, a lot of discussion about what exactly was among these. 2 terabytes worth of information was contained amongst that information.
I can't go into complete specificity because it's a current investigation.
Understood.
And there's certain information, obviously, I wouldn't want to share in a public forum.
Of course.
What I can say is that the National Archives, part of our responsibility is taking in and ingesting the presidential records and then someday making them available, obviously, to people that need to see those records or have the right to see those records. What was happening is the tapes that held Clinton records from everybody and anybody that worked in the Clinton administration, to include OMB, for example, anybody that worked under the Office of the President, were basically being compressed and compiled onto these drives, such as the one that I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be records, traditional records, and it might also be other things that were on individuals' computers. If you think what's on your computer, there might be business records, and there might be records that are not business records. So what was housed on this 2-terabyte drive was a myriad of items, a vast trove of documents and records, some specific to the Clinton White House, some obviously not specific to the Clinton White House.
So if I worked at OMB and I went on some website and bought a book and had it shipped to my house and punched in my credit card number, it's reasonable for me to assume that that personal information was on or could potentially be on that drive.
Information that would have been pulled off of your computer.
Regardless of whether it was personal or business.
Information that might have been compiled and pulled off of your computer could potentially be on that hard drive that is no longer with us.
Okay, and that is at this point unaccounted for, is that correct?
To date, our investigation has been unsuccessful in locating the drive nor positively identifying what happened to it. The National Archives has posted a $50,000 reward for information that would lead to the recovery of the drive. Unfortunately, to date, due to the internal control weaknesses, my investigation was severely restricted, and I'm not optimistic that we'll get that drive back, but we're still working it.
Is there a rule of thumb that equates the size of a drive to the potential number of records that are contained on it? Is there a way to say that a 2-terabyte drive might have X number of pieces of information on it, or do they sizes vary so much that that's not practical?
You can try and associate numbers. For example, I've heard that a 2-terabyte drive could hold 1 million books. I've heard it could hold 10% of the entire Library of Congress holdings. Now, remember, some of these records may be redundant. We might, for example, have a visitor's log that was kept on a couple of people's computers, so when it was pulled down, it might be replicated. We have all kinds of text. We might also have Excel files, for example. So it's very difficult. Again, this was kind of a catch basin for records from the Clinton administration. So it's very hard to, in fact, I don't know that we'll ever know the extent of the records that are on there. I do know that NARA has hired a contractor to look for PII information and is in the process of doing the notification. We've handed that function off. We're more involved in doing the investigation and looking for whether or not there were documents that resided on there that might have had a certain classification level or above.
Mr. Brackfeld, you mentioned the visitor's logs, and as someone who has visited OMB and the White House in the past and had to submit my Social Security number in order to get a security clearance to be admitted to the complex, it makes me think, is it possible that the information that's on there then would not just be limited to employees of the White House or OMB or associated organizations?
Francis, you and I are in the same boat. I'm waiting for my letter to come.
All right. That's the first issue that you brought out, the 2-terabyte drive that contained data from the Clinton administration. Tell me a little bit about the drive that you labeled CRMS.
CMRS, Case Management Reporting System. That drive holds records specific to our veterans. It may have their names and military IDs, Social Security numbers, and other privacy information. Now, NARA, and I must be clear, NARA does not believe a breach occurred that warrants notification. My position and what I testified to the effect is that my belief is that we lost chain of custody over that drive. I do not know, once that drive left our control, where it wound up, who had physical access to it. Therefore, while I'm in no way alleging that that information was accessed for nefarious purposes, at the same time I cannot say that the information was protected and was not accessed.
There's just no way to know.
No, we had a contract. Basically what happened was there was technical problems with the drive itself, and it was sent out for testing, and then if it failed certain levels of testing, it was to be destroyed. But as I testified, think about it going down the food chain. It left NARA's custody. It went to another company, which then we believe passed it on to a third company. And finally, if in fact it was destroyed for metal and recycling, to a fourth company. Now, we went to one of these companies down the food chain, and my agents went there, and they couldn't account for that specific drive. It had lost its identity by the time it got to them. Now, that might be a good thing, losing its identity, and some people would find comfort in that. But conversely, if it lost its identity, and if you have somebody that's embedded or working in one of those companies who looks at those drives to think, you know, is there something I can sell and make some money? Can I use, you know, can I, or even at a worst, you know, you can always have the worst case scenario. Somebody is embedded in one of those type of companies looking for national security or other sensitive information. Obviously, that's a problem. Now, NARA points, and correctly so, there was a clause in the contract which said that the prime contractor would ensure that the information remained confidential. But again, it left the control of the prime contractor, went to a secondary, a third, and then a fourth level, and I'm certain that the person or persons that wound up testing and working with that drive had no concern or little knowledge of the original contract language. So while some might find comfort in that, and in fact, the National Archives at first didn't even know that language existed, and it wasn't pointed out until, I think, just about a month ago. but yet the language is in the contract, so it does give the agency the capacity and capability to say such languages in the contract. But again, from my perspective, we lost chain of custody, and there was an alternative. We could have simply, and I testified to this, we could have, A, and should have, encrypted the drive, first thing. And second thing is, after encryption, we should have, if we were going to release that drive and have it tested for functionality, we could have degaussed it or scrubbed it. We did neither. And that, to me, is clear. It's a violation of NIST standards. It's a violation of OMB requirements. And sadly, it's a violation of NARA's own policy and procedures. So we kind of struck out. We were 0 for 3.
Mr. Brackfeld, we have to take a break here, but I want to continue. I want to talk about that third case that you mentioned, and I definitely want to talk about these chain of custody issues, some best practices that other agencies can take away. When we return to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, our conversation with Inspector General at NARA, Paul Brackfeld, continues in a moment.
This is Steve.
Hey, you're in the office?
No, I'm working from home on my BlackBerry smartphone using BlackBerry Mobile Voice System. Let's conference Bill in and get started. Bill?
Ready to go.
Want to improve your telework program? The BlackBerry solution can help. BlackBerry Mobile Voice System brings all of the office phone features you need to BlackBerry smartphones. It can help you avoid missed calls while you enjoy one phone number, one caller ID, and unified voicemail. Learn how BlackBerry Mobile Voice System can help you and your agency at blackberrygovernment.com.
Facing a new day, delivering services efficiently, improving citizens' lives. Booz Allen Hamilton supports the most important challenges of government, from defense and economic security to health and cyber solutions. Booz Allen's strategy and technology consultants partner with clients to deliver results that endure. Whether managing today's issues or looking beyond the horizon, clients can count on Booz Allen to help them be ready for what's next. BoozAllen.com/ready for what's next.
Cellist Yo-Yo Ma, one of the great stars of classical music, enthralls audiences all over the world with his passion and artistry. When it comes to picking a cello, he tends toward Italian instruments made in the 18th century. When it comes to a timepiece, however, he favors an instrument crafted in Switzerland, the Rolex Datejust. Since Rolex introduced the first self-winding calendar wristwatch in 1945, the Datejust has become one of the most sought-after models in the Oyster line. With its classic oyster design and magnified date window, the Datejust is every bit as distinctive as the master cellist who wears it. To see the Datejust and a complete selection of other Rolex timepieces, visit your official Rolex jeweler.
See what a new watch can say about you at Tourneau, the world's largest watch store since 1900. Tourneau, the fashion center at Pentagon City, Arlington.
Hello, the Geico Gecko here, and I've got a little secret to tell you. Come a bit closer to the radio. That's good. You ready for this? Geico was not named after me. Nah, it's true. It all came about over 70 years ago when Geico was known as the Government Employees Insurance Company, or GEICO. So if you're a government employee, you should be feeling pretty special about now. That's right. Geico was named after you. And you know what else? You could be eligible for federal employee discounts on car insurance, on top of Geico's already low rates. Plus, 97% of customers say they're satisfied with Geico service. Well, with all that, who could name a better company for car insurance? Certainly not me.
Well said, my little green friend. This is Mike Causey. If you're a federal employee, this is a great time to find out more about special Geico discounts that may apply to you. Just call Geico at 1-800-947-AUTO or visit geico.com and see how much you could save.
We're back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's In Depth with Francis Rose, and my guest on this portion of the program is the Inspector General at the National Archives and Records Administration, Paul Brackfeld. And Mr. Brackfeld, we're talking about your testimony at a House Oversight Subcommittee hearing last week. The entire hearing is available to be listened to anytime you'd like to at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Before the break, we were talking about the three episodes of data loss that you were testifying about at this hearing. The first one was the 2-terabyte drive of information from the Clinton administration. The second one was the CMRS data that included military information. And how much information was contained on that, do we know?
We believe, and I stress we believe, that millions of records of our nation's veterans were contained on that drive. Obviously, we've not actually tested, because we did not have, my office did not recover that drive and don't know what happened to it, other than it, as I said before, it passed down the food chain. We did not actually forensically analyze that drive, but based upon our belief, there were millions of records of our nation's veterans on that drive.
And then you mentioned a third one in your testimony to the committee. Tell us about that one as well.
Yeah, that's actually the most current case, and I got to tell you, we would love to get out of the PII investigation business, but it seems as if it's become a full-time job. The latest case kind of replicated or followed the previous case. It had to do with a drive that contained personnel records or screenshots of federal employees. That drive also was subject to failure, and I have to stress, when a drive fails, that means it doesn't necessarily mean it's not readable. It means that there's certain sectors that they have problems with, but the data is potentially very much recoverable. In this case, the drive was returned to a contractor, and it was kind of an interesting, and we're, again, very active in this case, but it's kind of interesting in this one because the contractor, and I don't want to give the name, specifically states, quote, "They assume no responsibility for the destruction of the data returned on the drive. They strongly encourage you to remove all confidential, proprietary, or personal information from any storage device before it's returned to the company." Now, again, the company itself says that if you give them the drive, they'll take the appropriate measures to ensure that the data that they recover is removed, but it should never have left NARA's domain, and we came to realize now through our investigation that not only did it just recently happen in April of 2009, but apparently there was a previous instance a year earlier in April of 2008 where the same path was followed. So we've actually, that one is actually a binary loss. It's two drives that were removed from our control.
All right. I pulled up a news story, and we just have about a minute left in this segment, and I'll look forward to having you come back after another break and talk about some of these best practices that I've been promising the audience we're going to get into. But I pulled a news story out from June of 2006. I think we all remember the laptop that was stolen from the Department of Veterans Affairs employee in Montgomery County. That was recovered with 26.5 million veterans and military personnel, not accessed, obviously, as we recall from the news story. But give us an idea, when we add all three of these together, what we're talking about relative to what that was, which was a national news story, not just in government media, but, I mean, it was the top of the hour on every newscast. And I'm sorry that we only have about 10 seconds left. Bigger, smaller, the same.
Don't know for sure. Likely bigger.
All right. Paul Brackfeld is the Inspector General at the National Archives and Records Administration. We'll be back to continue our conversation about this on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
I'm Chris Maurer, CNBC Business Radio. Stocks are lower. The Dow's down 59 points. The Nasdaq lower by 9. Oil prices are down $2 to $77 a barrel. Fewer Americans filed first-time claims for unemployment last week, down 12,000 to 502,000. But the unemployment rate rose to a 26-year high of 10.2% in October. Mortgage rates are down again. Interest rates on a 30-year fixed-rate home loan fell to 4.91% from 4.78% a week earlier. Rates hit a record low of 4.78% in the spring. And some new rules regarding overdraft fees. The Federal Reserve has issued a new rule that requires customers to agree to have their overdrafts covered before any fees can be levied. If no agreement is on record, purchases for more than a customer has in an account will be denied. Chris Maurer, CNBC Business Radio.
Standing next to me is power sports fanatic Larry. He has a passion for motorcycles, boats, and RVs. His second passion is saving money, so he reuses everything, including food.
You make it sound gross.
He uses fast food grease to power his car.
Everything smells like fries.
And reuses toothpaste.
It's not good if you're squeamish.
But you don't have to be like Larry, because GEICO makes it easy by helping you save on power sports insurance. To see how much you could save, visit geico.com or call 1-800-442-9253.
Small business owners are looking for customers. We at Intuit Websites believe the customers are everywhere. Down the street, across town, there could be a customer in Scranton looking for you right now. Get found with your own website from Intuit Websites. Just pick a style, edit, and get online as easy as 1, 2, 3. Intuit Websites is just $4.99 a month. So instead of spending time looking for customers, have them find you for a change. Get a 30-day free trial at Intuit.com. That's in the best
investors from Pennsylvania and Connecticut got taken for a lot of money by a man who lied.
This case involves roughly a $500,000 fraud on the part of the subject against three different victims.
Special Agent John McKenna at the Bridgeport, Connecticut FBI office, he investigated this theft of investor money. He says the subject had a jewelry business and got the money from the unknowing victims to help the business.
He diverted some of the funds to a real estate project without telling the investors about that.
Well, the real estate project collapsed. The subject was in debt big time. McKenna says a lien was placed on this expensive property, and the investors were told they weren't going to get their money back.
At that point, the two Pennsylvania victims came to the FBI in Bridgeport, Connecticut, and complained that they felt they had been defrauded.
The fraudulent jewelry business owner was sentenced to 20 months in prison in order to pay back the money after pleading guilty to interstate transportation of money obtained by fraud. I'm Neil Schiff of the FBI on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The Federal Drive is every weekday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Hear news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Jay Norris. The Federal Drive team will help give you the important information you need about the changing administration and how it impacts every part of your agency. Tune in 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. or go to federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Drive.
Sponsored by Lockheed Martin. We never forget who we're working for.
You guys that are security experts, good news. Department of Homeland Security is in search of 1,000 cybersecurity experts. The Department of Homeland Security will be starting filling up a lot of these empty positions very soon. Janet Napolitano, the department's secretary, made it public that they will need more than 1,000 cyber analysts, developers, and engineers, and they're going to try to recruit them over the next 3 years.
Stay up to date with technology. It's Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Since 2001, spending on government contracts has more than doubled. As agency needs grow, finding the best contract vehicles and streamlined procurement becomes more difficult. Program executive and chief acquisition officers from the U.S. Air Force, NASA, NIH, and FAA will discuss solutions for enterprise-wide procurement at the AFCEA Bethesda Breakfast on Major IT Contract Vehicles, November 18th at the Bethesda North Marriott. For more information, visit bethesda-afcea.org/novbreakfast.com or call 571-323-2587.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest for this part of the hour is the Inspector General at the National Archives. Paul Brackfeld was a witness at a hearing of the House Oversight Subcommittee that covers NARA issues last week, and we've talked about, Mr. Brackfeld, the data losses that you were testifying about, and in particular, you were asked a lot of questions about the chain of custody issues there. There were some issues, though, that the members of Congress didn't, I don't know if they didn't give you a chance to get to it, if they didn't dig deep enough, but there were some things I wanted to follow up on, some questions that the members asked that I wanted to get a little bit more information about, which was the original reason I wanted you to come on. And I believe that by getting to some of those issues, if I'm sitting at another agency saying, I really hope it's not me that's the next person that gets called, as Ms. Thomas, the acting archivist, was called to testify about these issues, I think the information that you could have shared with the members would be instructive in that way. Talk about the recommendations that you made to the archives about these chain of custody issues, and then we can talk about what they've done with those recommendations.
As their current ongoing investigations, we've not made formal recommendations to date, but I have been meeting with the acting archivist of the United States, and I've also been meeting with, and my staff have been meeting with staff within the National Archives. I think the main point that we're trying to convince NARA is that don't hide behind legal niceties. You would not return it. The military would not send a tank in for scrap to be scrapped and leave a shell in the breach. There's certain security measures you should take for certain. You have to treat PI and classified records as one treats their most prized assets. You have to secure them. I think one of the things I try and tell people is it's nice to have policy and procedures, guidelines, et cetera. There's a cottage industry for that. People write policy and procedures all the time. But that doesn't necessarily mean anything is more secure. What you have to do is you have to ensure that those policy and procedures are adopted. You have to conduct drills, inspections, exercises. You have have to have technologically savvy people in your agency that know what they're doing and know how to protect data. And I think that's what I would emphasize, that you need to have the resources and the skill level to actually test and ensure that your data is sound and protected. Otherwise, you never know where the next problem is going to pop up. It's going to be like, you know, the dike with the holes in it. You don't know where the next burst is going to come through. You have to build the wall right, and you have to make sure that it's being adhered to, all those policy and procedures and requirements. And you have to, and this is perhaps self-serving, I'm a big fan of having a strong IG that has the resources necessary to do the work, because IGs do a very unique service. We have the skill set and to do these independent audits and evaluations and assessments. And we have the ability to communicate to Congress and to our other stakeholders when we find issues. And that usually leads to resolution, or I'd like to believe that would be the case.
There is a question of linguistics, too, that I think one of the members, and I don't recall which one it was, I don't think give you nor Ms. Thomas the opportunity to fairly address, and that was regarding the recommendations report conducted by SAIC.
Right.
That report contained 29 recommendations. Ms. Thomas said the 27 of them had been addressed, and you, the member, then addressed a question to you saying how many of these have been complied with, or something along those lines. Perhaps you can refresh my memory. You mentioned two, but it seemed to me that the member was asking you and Ms. Thomas different questions. How many have been addressed and how many have been complied with can be two totally different things.
Well, let me answer what I know to be. I speak factually, so let me talk with my facts. We do, under the Federal Information Security Management Act and under FMFI, we do IT security audits. We've identified IT at National Archives security to be a material weakness. In 2007, the National Archives brought in a contractor, SAIC, to do what's called the Program Review for Information Security Services Management Assistance, or PRISMA. They're the ones that, it's not an audit, but it's review, then they use a NIST guidelines. They came up with 29 recommendations that they believe were essential to strengthen NARA's security posture. As NARA has moved to with the intent of knocking IT security from being a material weakness down a level, we reviewed the status of these 29 recommendations very recently. My IT auditors, who I have a great deal of faith in, reviewed the 29 recommendations and the status of corrective action, and we could only find documentation that we accepted as corrective action having been implemented for two of the recommendations. So it's simple mathematics. It's 29 recommendations. We can validate two as having been adopted. Thus, 27, in our view, remain open. We passed this information to the appropriate people in NARA through emails, and we asked for a meeting to follow up. And that, not just emails, we actually sent a matrix with our findings. We asked for a follow-up meeting, and prior to the hearing, that meeting had not transpired. But I have to add one more thing. The PRISM review, which I talked about, was actually conducted in October 2007. So the National Archives had 2 years to address and adopt the recommendations. And again, we found 27 of the 29 had not been fully implemented.
Okay. Of those 27 that remain to be implemented, and of the recommendations that you have made, understandably not formal recommendations because your investigation is not concluded, how many of these, though, as an auditor, do you view to be low-hanging fruit that should be relatively easy for the agency to implement?
You know, I'll leave that to my IT auditors. I don't think... I think when we talk about IT security, we think all the fruit's pretty important and pretty ripe and should be addressed. I don't like to take chances with IT security. The risks are of hacker attacks, the risk of denial of service, the risk of data being compromised, the risk of loss of data. These are all so profound that I think you should act pretty quickly And if you bring in a reputable company and they give you a report, which in my view looked pretty good and pretty well thought out, the methodology, I think you work on it pretty fast.
Note here to anyone interested in this that I've reached out to SAIC and hope to bring someone on the program in a short period of time to talk about those 29 recommendations and what they encompass. And what exactly they're recommending that NARA do about this situation. Mr. Brackfeld, I appreciate your time today, your generosity in talking about this issue. One final question. We know now that David Ferrero has been confirmed by the Senate and maybe on the job now, I don't know, confirmed earlier this week to become the permanent archivist, to take over for the acting archivist, Ms. Thomas. Do you think that having someone, not necessarily him in particular, but having someone as the permanent archivist will make a difference in the agency's efforts to address these kinds of issues?
David Ferriero was going to be sworn in tomorrow, his administrative swearing. I've reviewed his history, his background, and he seems extremely competent, and I really look forward to working with him, and I hope that him and I and we can work together and bring positive change to this agency.